My guest at this time is Elaine Donnelly. She's the president of the Center for Military Readiness. She is quoted extensively in a piece that ran Monday in the Washington Times, and it goes in depth about the details of the report that shocked Washington and much of the country in recent days when it was reported that 26,000 members of our armed forces were victims of sexual assault in fiscal year 2012. But in breaking down the numbers, Ms. Donnelly says that that means that men are actually more frequently a victim than women. And she joins me now to explain why that is and what that tells us. And Elaine, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
How often do these sorts of surveys come out? What do we have to compare this with about how bad this is getting?
Well, this is an annual survey. It was ordered, I think they started doing them back in 2004, and it provides all sorts of data. There's about 1,400 pages and two volumes of this study. And I've actually read a lot of this study. Most people don't. But what you find there, there's two different sections. One is on actual reports, and the second volume is about estimates of reports. In the actual reports, we know that the numbers are increasing steadily. The numbers of reports of sexual assaults among military personnel have actually increased by 129% since 2004. The actual numbers are 1,275 to 2,949. If you look at all the Department of Defense reports, including ones of civilians, the increase is a 98% increase. We also find that among the reports, again, actual reports, that more than 12% of the reports that the Department of Defense has received came from men. And the number of perpetrators, while you try to figure that out, there's only 2% of the reports that are women, so the rest of them, 98%, must have assaulters who are male. So we've got a male-on-male problem here. The Department of Defense doesn't want to comment on this. They know the numbers are there. They say that they care. But all the attention usually is given to the female members of the military who are subjected to sexual assault. But frankly, I was astonished by the comment made at the end of the article by Rowan Scarborough, quoting Aaron Belkin, who heads a gay activist group called the Palm Center. They're academic. They're based at University of California, Santa Barbara, I believe. Anyway, he says, well, this is not really a gay issue. It's, he says, this is sort of like similar to prison rape. There was another activist, David Siegel, an academic whose name I've heard and known for many years. He, too, said the same thing. Well, if it's male-on-male assault, that's not gay behavior. That's like being in prison. Well, that's a great slogan to use for recruiting young men into the military, isn't it? It's outrageous. And yet, here it is, the Department of Defense doesn't quite know what to do with these figures, and so they just sort of, you know, put them in there and hope nobody notices.
Well, Elaine, you mentioned that there's been a massive influx in assaults in just the past 8 or 9 years. When you go back to those numbers from the middle part of last decade, what do they look like in terms of males assaulting other males? Because obviously, in the meantime, we've had the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Well, yes, we have actually more accurately called lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender law, LGBT law in the military is the policy right now. So next month, you're going to see another celebration of LGBT Equality Month at the White House. President Obama and all of his top officials will be there. It'll be very interesting to see how they react to numbers like this, except to say, well, that's just like a prison atmosphere. Well, just imagine if some, you know, head of business or government or member of Congress or candidate said, well, you know, that problem of sexual assaults, well, it's just like what happens to women in prison. Excuse me? It's just an astonishing attempt to disregard the consequences of behavior that still, under military law, is illegal. And yet, it's the same activists, they say, well, let's get rid of those laws. They're obsolete. We don't need them anymore. Yes, we have cultural change going on in our military, and it's being driven by policymakers who have very little common sense. And we're seeing the consequences of that right now.
How directly can these numbers be tied to the change in policy we saw 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, that's something I think we're going to see this play out. It's going to, those numbers are going to stay there. They might get worse in the next several years. In the meantime, this issue of sexual misconduct in the armed forces, of the heterosexual variety. That is a serious issue, and the Pentagon doesn't quite recognize that. Maybe they ought to change some other policies rather than saying blaming it all on the lawyers. And you know, lawyers make a lot of mistakes, but in this case, the Uniform Code of Military Justice is a system of law that is subject to a chain of command in the armed forces for a reason. We don't have civilian laws governing the military. That's why we have a separate code of justice. And if you take all of the cases involving sexual assault and you take it out of the chain of command and you put it in with civilian lawyers or judicial systems or other ways that are being recommended, you weaken the authority of the commander. And there's not enough evidence to show that this is necessary. Yes, there's been a few controversial cases, one in which a lieutenant general overturned a conviction of a person accused of assaulting a woman in his own home. But that lieutenant general, Franklin was his name, he actually studied that case and came to his own intelligent conclusion that the evidence did not support the verdict. So knowing he was putting his career at risk, he overturned that verdict, and now you have people in Congress saying, oh, well, let's just throw the baby out with the bathwater. We don't like what he did. If you're accused of a crime, you're automatically guilty, and they're trying to inscribe that attitude into law. This would be a big mistake, but it seems like Congress is headed in exactly that direction.
Elaine, you mentioned that there could be some policy changes to help drive these numbers back in the other direction. What do you have in mind?
Well, back in January, I filed testimony with the Armed Services Committee, and I think we have to start with the basics, and that means basic training. Back in 1998, unanimously, the Kassebaum-Baker Commission came out with recommendations to separate basic training for Army and Air Force and Navy trainers. Do it like the Marines do. The Marines train basic trainees separately, male and female, at Parris Island. That's a good thing to do. It's a good first start. Secondly, they should stop pretending that sexuality does not matter. You can't solve a problem by extending it into the combat arms. The big push for women in combat, this argument that, well, we have to have women in the infantry so they'll be respected more and they won't be assaulted, this argument was made by Representative Pat Schroeder more than 20 years ago after the tailhook scandal, when you had some drunken aviators and female aviators, I might add, who partied wildly in Las Vegas. And Schroeder made the argument, well, this means we have to have women in tactical aviation. 20-some years later, her theory is completely discredited. Respect for women today is higher than ever, respect for women in the military. But the sexual assault numbers keep climbing up. So I think before we start implementing a theory that's been discredited, the members of the Pentagon and the people who make policy in Congress as well, they need to stop. They need to assess where we are, what has happened in the last two decades, and they need to stop pretending that a lot of sensitivity training or highly paid consultants, that is going to make a difference in the problems, the sex problems that we're seeing right now.
Elaine, we'll have to hold it right there. Thank you very much, as always, for your time with us.
You're very welcome.
Elaine Donnelly is president of the Center for Military Readiness. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.